Research und Protestiers.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the TAG Immobilien AG conference call regarding the publication of the annual report 2018. At this time, all participants have been placed on a listen-only mode. The floor will be open for questions following the presentation. Let me now turn the floor over to your host, Mr. Martin Thiel.
Yeah, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody. This is Martin from TAG. Thank you very much for dialing into our full-year earnings conference call for the financial year 2018. I hope you all had the chance to look at our presentation, which is online today on the website, or to follow our presentation via the online modus, which is new today. Perhaps this is helpful for you to follow the presentation. So let's start on page number 4 in the presentation with the highlights for the financial year 2018. And starting with the bottom line, that means looking at FFO, the development also in the fourth quarter was quite successful. We achieved an FFO of nearly 38 million in the fourth quarter. That's even a little bit more than in the third quarter. And putting on top this on top of the results of the first 9 months, we ended up with an FFO of 146.5 million for the full year. This is slightly above our guidance, which was at the midpoint at 142 million. This translates into 1 euro per share FFO compared to our guidance of 97 euros per share. Perhaps not a big surprise for everyone today, but still a very successful result for 2018, especially having in mind that we have already increased the guidance during the course of the year. So therefore, we are very happy and satisfied with the fourth quarter. Looking at the operational performance, again, a very strong quarter, especially looking at in terms of vacancy reduction. So we have reduced the vacancy in our residential units in the last quarter by 50 basis points, 60 basis points year on year. Perhaps you remember that in the first month we had a little increase in vacancy rates due to larger CapEx programs. Now we are again below the 5% mark at 4.7%. And in the total portfolio, if we include the acquisitions from the financial year 2018 and the commercial units within the residential portfolio, we ended up at 5.3%, coming from 5.8% at the beginning of the year. Like-for-like rental growth still looks nice, without effects from vacancy reduction at 2.3%, including the effects from vacancy reduction at 2.6%. Looking at NAV and LTV development, I'm sure you have seen that we had a full-year valuation, and this, of course, leads to an increase in the EPRA NAV to 17.32. This is a 26% increase year-on-year, and also this helps clearly with an LTV reduction or concerning the LTV reduction. We are now at 47.3% at year-end. This is a 5 percentage point reduction year-on-year. The fourth quarter was also a successful quarter in terms of acquisitions. We were able to acquire another approximately 1,200 units. And then looking at the full year numbers, you see on the highlight slide that we acquired 2,700 residential units, which is for us still a nice external growth. And it's especially nice because if you look at the acquisition prices, that's definitely attractive. We were able to acquire in our core markets at an average gross yield of 7.8%. And if we compare that to the gross yield from the prior year, which was slightly higher, 8.2%, you can see that we are still able to acquire, even in this very competitive market, at attractive prices. I will come to the details of the acquisitions in some moments. On the disposal side, we sold mainly non-core assets, two portfolio size sales comprising approximately 1,200 units, and in the ongoing disposals also this year, a quite large part of non-core units. So all in all, we sold 1,600 units, mostly on the non-core side, which is for us also, of course, a good news. So we cleaned up our portfolio to a very large extent. Then taking a closer look in the financials, I'm now on page 6 of the presentation looking at the income statement. Looking at the main developments, we increased our net rent by 9.2 million. And the good news is that this increase by a little bit more than 9 million is nearly exactly the increase in the net rental income. If you compare the numbers 2018 and 2017, the 246 with the 236, this is also an increase by 9 million. So we are definitely more efficient than in the previous year, despite the fact that we had higher maintenance expenses. So 5 million more maintenance expenses in 2018 compared to 2017. And on the other side, reduced vacancy costs, reduced losses in receivables and other efficiency effects. I think that is clearly good news for the operating development. Also, the increased net income from services helped us to achieve the FFO increase. The net income from services was up from 14.9 million to 17.7 million. Looking at the total FFO effect from the services, we can tell you that the impact or the FFO impact increased to 6.8 million after 3.9 million in 2017. You'll find all the details regarding this development in the service business, the different FFO effects, on page 36 of the presentation. So you see this service business is, as we already announced 1 or 2 years back, more and more important also for us. Just a short comment at this stage at valuation results, up by $430 million compared to nearly $300 million in the last year. This is a 10% uplift. I will come to the details in a second. Perhaps you remember that with last year in our P&L, one-off effect, which was a provision for real estate transfer tax risks. So we had to book this provision of 8.5 million at the end of last year. This year, we were already able to release 6.2 million at the end of the financial year 2018, because the risk that we identified at that time now is not anymore existing. We could clear this fact. So there's still a risk of 2.3 million. That's not really material, but important if you analyze development in other operating expenses and this year in other operating income. So have in mind we have had one-off effects on the negative side last year and on the positive side this year. Looking at the net financial results, cash after one-offs, we had a strong improvement year on year by more than 12 million. So if you look at the P&L and see an increase in a net financial result or a higher expenses regarding net financial result of 96 million compared to 82 million the year before, that's mainly the effect of the fair value valuation of the convertible bond. The net financial result, cash after one-offs, as I said, improved strongly by 12.4 million. And this was a result of the refinancing transactions we did in 2017. At that time, mainly referring to our bank loans, and in 2018, where we had refinancing activities regarding our corporate bonds. Income taxes are still on a very moderate level. We were able to limit cash tax expenses in financial year 2018 to 4 million compared to 3.1 million in the financial year 2017. I think this is also good news and shows that we have, to a very large extent, really a tax-efficient structure. Of course, we pencil in increased cash taxes for the next years, but still it will be on a moderate level, not getting to tax rates of 10% or more. Then turning to the next page, you see the development of EBITDA, FFO, and AFFO. The EBITDA margin increased in 2018 from 67.7% in 2017 to the 68.3%. As I already said, we are more efficient on the operational side. We had higher net income from services. So this was the main reason why the EBITDA increased. I already mentioned the increase in FFO, of course, supported by higher or better net financial results, but also the AFFO developed very positively. On this slide, we present two AFFO figures for you because we know that the companies within the peer group are reporting that differently. When we present AFFO, we always present a number after all CapEx. So whether it is capitalized maintenance or modernization CapEx, there's no difference. So in these terms, the AFFO increased by 5%. If you look at the AFFO before modernization CapEx, the increase is even stronger. This AFFO before modernization CapEx, you see this on the table on the left side, increased from 115 to 113 million. Looking on page number 8 on the balance sheet, that's just two short comments on these numbers. Looking at the cash position, we have a slightly reduced cash position at the end of the fourth quarter compared to the third quarter. The reason is very simple. We paid acquisitions. Looking at the total acquisitions that we made in the financial years 2017 and 2018, the very large part is still paid in full out of equity, so we did not start any bank refinancing to the largest part of our acquisitions in the last 2 years, so therefore we definitely have cash potential for the next acquisitions to come. On the bottom right of this page, you see a short description of the, or a short analysis of the change in LTV. Of course, the portfolio valuation helps us, and the reduction in LTV is mainly driven or completely driven by portfolio valuation. But I think important to point out once again that in a world without portfolio valuation gains, we are still able to keep the LTV where it is, to keep it stable, even though we have a very high and attractive dividend payout ratio of 75% of FFO. So the dividend payment is more than compensated in terms of LTV by the ongoing results that we achieve with our very attractive renting business. On page number 9, you see the development of NAV, a 26% increase year on year. If we exclude the dividend payment of 65 cents that we made in this year or in last year's AGM, the increase is even by 30%. So we think definitely a very good and attractive development in NAV, and of course something where we expect more to come also in the next years. On slide number 10, short comments on the development of the average cost of debt. We are now down to 1.9% after 2.3% at the beginning of the year, and there's still potential. So if you look at the maturing bank loans or where the interest terms are ending in the next 3 years, that's dated in the second bullet point on this page number 10, you see that we have more than 400 million of bank loans with average coupons, often north of 3%, that are still that still offer potential. If you look at today's financing terms, looking at 10-year bank loans, on average, perhaps the interest rates are at 1.5 to 1.6% for 10-year mortgage-secured bank loans, really all in. So therefore, you see that we still have potential for further reductions in our cost of debt. On slide number 11, you see more details on debt financing structure. Perhaps important to point out on this slide, you see this on the left side in the bullet points, that it's not only the case that we have reduced our average cost of debt strongly, we also have still a very long maturity in our financial debt. In the bank loans, it's on average 9.3 years. In the total financial debt, that means including all convertible bonds, corporate bonds, and commercial paper, it's still more than 8 years. We think a very important fact and a very positive if someone looks on our financing side. And also very positive, and that's now presented on page number 12, is the development regarding cash metrics on the financing side. We present here to you a slide that we had in a similar form in the last presentations, but now we include also the guidance to the expected values for the financial year 2019, because this financial year 2019 is then the first year where really all refinancings are in the P&L in full, especially on the ICR. This has, of course, very positive effect. So then you see that we expect an ICR for 2019 of 4.6 times after 3.8 times in 2018. And also we expect a further improvement, even though it's still on a good level, the net financial debt to EBITDA ratio to 10.6 after 11.2 in the financial year 2018. So looking at cash metrics, I think the development of TG is extremely positive on the financing side, and this is for us perhaps in many cases more important than just pure the LTV metric, which is of course mainly driven by valuation gains. Looking at the net financial debt in euro per square meter, we're still at 450 euros. So therefore you can see that our financing structure, our financing levels are stable over the course of the last years. We are not levering up. We keep that stable, and beside that, we have strongly operating financing metrics regarding our financing structure. Then I'm now on page 14, the portfolio map, and just a short comment on that. The number of units increased to 84,400 at the end of the year 2018 compared to 83,000 at the end of 2017. So in these markets, we are still definitely a net buyer, even though we announced in our guidance for 2019 that we are planning to sell 2,100 units all in all. But this is a number that you already know from our guidance in November 2018, which is mainly refers to non-core assets. But of course, we expect further acquisitions to come, even though it's not included in the guidance as in the years before. On slide number 15, you see the development in the vacancy rate in our residential units. As I said, very successful fourth quarter. Our CapEx programs that we had mainly at the beginning or in the first half of the year now showed a success, especially in regions like in Gera, like Düben, like Chemnitz. We had now the chance to let the apartments that we modernized during the year, and we are very happy to end up with a vacancy rate below the 5% mark and a reduction of 60 basis points. This is, by the way, I think I already mentioned that in the call from the last quarter, also the target for the financial year 2019. So for 2019, you should expect a like-for-like basis between 50 and 60 basis points in vacancy reduction. Looking on the next slide and looking at like-for-like rental growth, I already said the numbers look definitely nice. 2.3% basis like-for-like rental growth and 2.6% like-for-like rental growth, including the effects from vacancy reduction. We see here two effects. First effect is that the basis like-for-like rental growth is picking up, and this is a reflection of the lower vacancy rate. Simply now we have the chance that we have stronger demand in our markets as we have more and more regions where we have a vacancy rate perhaps already down at a kind of minimum rate to increase the rent stronger. So therefore, 2.3% basis like-for-like rental growth definitely looks good, especially having in mind that we achieved this 2.3% nearly completely without any modernization programs for existing tenants. You see this in a small chart above this 2.3%, where we present the breakdown of this 2.3%, that only 0.1% of the total like-for-like rental growth is the effect from the modernization surcharge. And this is also the reason why we still can keep the maintenance and capex level on a moderate level, even though it increased to 19 euros per square meter. Of course, percentage-wise, this is a strong increase, but generally speaking, this is definitely still an attractive level, and there's no chance or there are no plans to change our capex strategies. But what is clearly the effect that we see is that we have to invest more now on a level where we are below the 5% mark regarding the vacancy rate. So therefore, perhaps to a large extent, some low-hanging fruits from prior years now have been harvested, and now we simply need to invest a little bit more. For 2019, you shouldn't not expect any material change in the maintenance and capex level. So we assume in our business plan this around 19 euros maintenance and capex is a good also estimate for the next financial year to come. Then I'm now on slide number 18. Of course, interesting, the result of the full year valuation that we now can present to you. The valuation levels are up. You see this on the key metrics on the right side to 940 euros per square meter, after approximately 900 euros in June and approximately 840 euros at the beginning of the year. Gross yield stands now at 6.5%. This is a multiple, or translates into a multiple of 15.3 times the current rent. So really the current rent, including a vacancy rate of approximately 5%. And I think it's fair to say that this level, this valuation level, is still conservative and that it should offer also potential for the financial years 2019 and 2020 for further valuation gains. It's in general a 10% uplift. If you look at the split, approximately 73% of this 10% annual uplift is coming from yield compression, and nearly 30%, and I think that's also good news, is still coming from our strong rental growth and vacancy reduction, or in other words, in this regard, we had stronger rental growth and better vacancy reduction than assumed in the models from the valuer 1 year before. Look at slide number 19. You see the details of the portfolio valuation is a split down in all our regions. Generally, we increased the multiple, so the implied multiple, to 15.3 times. I already mentioned that, compared to 14.1 times in the prior year. So on average, a 1.2 increase in the multiple. And then looking into the different regions, you will see that we have one region which is a little bit below average. That is the Gera region, with an increase in the multiple of 0.4. But Gera, of course, is a market where we see just moderate yield compression, but where we see yield compression, that's, I think, also interesting, and where the larger part of the valuation result is then coming, or a large part in terms of percentages, is coming from the operational overperformance. And then we have regions like Berlin, which is in our case completely the Berlin commuter belts, or like Erfurt, larger parts of our portfolio where we still see a strong increase in the multiple in the Berlin region, in the meanwhile to 17.3 times, and in Erfurt to 15.8 times, but still these levels compared to the dynamics we see in the markets seem to be moderate. So therefore we will have the next valuation in June 2019 and then of course another valuation in December 2019. We're optimistic for further valuation uplift, but of course today too early to give you any concrete guidance in this regard. On slide 21, we present the total acquisitions that we made in the financial year 2018, and I already mentioned that we are definitely satisfied to acquire nearly 3,000 units in 2018 at attractive prices. So 7.8% gross yield gives us from the very first day a strong cash flow, and of course these acquisitions offer further upside potential from the average vacancy rate, which was 12.7% from the acquisitions in 2018. And as all of these acquisitions were really in markets where we already were, all of them in East Germany, locations like Schwerin, like Neubrandenburg, where we already know the market very well, we're very optimistic that we can get this potential from vacancy reduction. On the disposal side, if we move to page 22. We sold in the fourth quarter one portfolio, 719 units of non-core assets. Just to make this clear, the 719 units is part of the 1,600 non-core disposals that we included in our guidance. So if you remember our guidance, we said that we will dispose in 2019 2,100 units. 500 units from our ongoing disposals, that's a very normal disposal business that we have, and 1,600 non-core disposals. Out of this 1,600 non-core disposals, 700 units are already done. And you see the closing of this 700 units is in the middle of 2019, so nearly exactly how we communicated or how we penciled it in. The remaining then 900 units of these non-core assets will be done in smaller sizes. And I think this is on the way, and we will have also success, and we will come back to you with these disposals in the next month. Mainly, as I said, we sold non-core assets. If you look at the average vacancy rate of these assets sold in 2018, the vacancy rate stood at 27.8%. This sounds perhaps a little bit confusing if you know our business model, where we like to acquire portfolios with high vacancy rates. But not every vacancy rate is an upside potential. In these locations that we sold, we think the vacancy reduction will be definitely difficult. Perhaps locations where we have a portfolio that's not too concentrated. So therefore, for us, a good decision from our point of view to clean up the portfolio in this regard. And we're happy to sell this portfolio on average at book value or even slightly above book value. That's the development regarding acquisitions and disposals, and then coming to the guidance, I'm now on slide 24. I've already commented the very good development in FFO, which is up by 15%, and we're happy to announce today that we again increase our dividend per share to 75 cents per share. That's still a 75% payout from FFO. Originally, the guidance was 73 cent per share, but as we overachieved our guidance, it's absolutely consequent to increase the dividend guidance too. We leave the guidance for the financial year 2019 unchanged, so the guidance for FFO in absolute terms at the midpoint stands still at 155 million, or if you look at this at a per share basis, it's 1.06 euro or 80 cents on dividend per share. The guidance should be conservative, but so far, of course, it is unclear for us what's the exact timing for acquisitions and for disposals. So therefore, we think it's appropriate to keep the guidance where it is and then look at the development of the first or the second quarter to give you perhaps an update when we have a closer look on acquisitions and disposals. That's it from my side with an overview of our financial year 2018 results. Thank you so far for listening. And of course, now we're happy to take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press 9 and the star key on your telephone keypad. In case you wish to withdraw your question, please press 9 and star again. Please press 9 and star to state your questions. And the first question comes from Sander Bunk from Barclays. Over to you.
Hi, good morning, team. Three questions for me, please. I'll ask them one by one. And the first one is on the acquisitions going forward. And given your comment earlier that you said that some of the low-hanging fruits in terms of vacancy reduction have now been taken. How do you look at acquisitions going forward? Is it possible still to acquire units with more vacancy in order to bring that down and as a result accelerate your like-for-like rental growth?
Yeah, good morning, Sander. Clear answer, yes. My comment towards this low-hanging fruits, or however you would call it, is more on the existing portfolio. It's very simple to reduce vacancy from 5% to 4%. This is then the next step. It's, of course, a little bit more cost-intensive than from 10 to 9%. So on the existing portfolio, we definitely have potential, but this is the reason why our CapEx and maintenance increased from formerly 15 to 16 euros to now 19 euros per square meter. And then talking about new acquisitions, I think you can see this. If you look at the figures for the financial year 2018, we acquired 2,700 units with approximately 13% average vacancy rate in markets that we know very well. So yes, we definitely are still finding and sourcing acquisitions where we have this vacancy reduction potential, and that combined with a gross yield of nearly 8% without effect from vacancy reduction makes us still optimistic for an attractive external growth.
Perfect. That's very clear. Second one, on your LTV target, because pretty much you're well below your LTV target now, and going forward we would probably expect more revaluations to come. So in other words, your LTV is going to trend down even further. How do you think about this? Are you going to reduce your LTV target, or does it mean that you have more room for acquisitions going forward?
Well, if you look at the LTV, that's for us generally not a question of, let's say, firepower for new acquisitions, because as we finance the largest part of our acquisitions of our portfolio via mortgage secured bank loans, the group level or the ratio, the LTV ratio on group level is really not relevant or not that relevant. So therefore, it's more something where we say, well, what is from our point of view a stable and sustainable basis for the debt for the company? And of course, if we deliver with the help of valuation gains, that's something different than really repaying debt. So I think today it's definitely too early to announce a further reduction in the LTV target, but very clear if we see further valuation gains, a certain consequence needs to be then to redefine the LTV target, and that means to reduce the LTV target. But this is something you shouldn't expect in the first quarter of 2019 or the second quarter of 2019. Let's see where the valuation results end up during the course of 2019 and how the debt development of the company, which we see very positive, is, and then talk about this perhaps at the end of the year again. But generally, or to say it differently, what will not happen is that we deliver strongly with the help of valuation gains and then lever up exact in the same size with real debt. That's for us something different. Sander, does this answer your question?
Sander, we cannot hear you anymore. Okay. Well, I will then go to the next questioner. It is Thomas Neuhold from Kepler Cheuvreux. Over to you.
Good morning, everybody. There was three questions, and maybe we take them one by one or so. Firstly, on your service business, it contributed already $7 billion in FFO in 18, and you're still in the rollout phase. Can you give us an indication of the total long-term FFO potential of the service business, and by when do you think you will be able to reach the full potential?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Thomas, for the question. You find some details on our service business in the slides 33, 34, and further. On slide 34, you see details regarding the main, let's say, FFO contributors from the service line, which is energy services and multimedia services. So the energy services contributed 2.1 million to FFO this year, the multimedia service 3.8 million this year. And then in these red boxes, if you see them, you see what size of units are covered in 2018 and what's the long-term goal. Long-term goal in this regard means the next 3 to perhaps 4 years. And then it's very, very simple to make a calculation and say, okay, applying the energy service, for example, to 2.1 million on the 31,000 units, comparing that with 70,000 units, then this FFO impact should perhaps more than double over the course of the next 3 to 4 years. And it's the same calculation basically with the multimedia services. This is still the most important part of our service business. I mean, there are other businesses like caretaker services and like craftsmen, where we are more heading towards improving the quality of the portfolio, the quality of those services. But energy services and multimedia services, that's the main cash driver, the main contribution to FFO.
Yeah, understood. The next question is on the slide on page 26, the overview about the vacancy rate in the portfolio. Obviously, you have done an excellent job in reducing vacancy rates across the board in most of your regions. Only in Chemnitz and Gera, you still have a relatively high vacancy rate. I was wondering if you can give us an update on what is going on locally in these two regions and what your strategy is there to reduce the vacancy rate.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. In the Chemnitz region, the vacancy rate is still close to 10%. In Gera, it's still above 8%. But if you look at the development on a like-for-like basis, you can see this also on page 27 of the presentation. We were able to reduce the vacancy rate in Chemnitz by 1.0 percentage points and in Gera by 0.4 percentage points. So yes, of course, we're making steps. I think in the Chemnitz region or in the Chemnitz city especially, the steps are even larger. Gera is a market I think we're very successful, but to be honest, a more difficult market, that's very clear. By the way, these are the two regions where we're also investing the largest part of our CapEx, and especially in the Chemnitz region, we invested a lot, but also in Gera, we invested a lot. You see all the details on slide 26. So we're still happy that we have these two regions where we have in both cases really potential to reduce vacancy rates further.
Okay, and the last question is on your guidance. The guidance includes roughly 500 unit sales from ongoing disposal. I was wondering, just in case, if you're not able to do enough acquisitions this year, which you obviously a target for, would you consider slowing down the ongoing disposal business a little bit in case you're not able to make enough acquisitions just to keep the overall portfolio level at the size you have now, or would you continue with the ongoing disposals?
We would continue with the disposals. First, it's very clear we have this 500 units disposal stream. That's a kind of ongoing business. To a small part, it's privatization. As I said, last year was also a larger part of non-core assets, and they are also included often apartment blocks of 20, 30 units that we sell to private individuals. That's really an ongoing business that we have. We are still optimistic regarding acquisitions, so therefore we don't see us as a net seller, even though if you look at the guidance at a first glance, it looks like if we are a net seller, but to make this clear once again, that's more technically. We don't assume any new acquisitions, even though it's very likely in the guidance. Where we really try to harmonize this with acquisitions is disposal of assets in more high-priced markets. So transactions that you know from us from the financial years 2017, 2016, 2015, where we sold in Berlin, Freiburg, and so on. This is something you should also expect in the future. But then only in cases when we see, okay, now we need new cash to finance new acquisitions. So this is a kind of disposals that we really try to harmonize with new acquisitions. There's no pressure on that, and this capital recycling will continue in the future. But for this 500 units, it's for us very clear that this is something that will continue also in 2019, regardless what's the exact point in time when we do the new acquisitions.
Understood. Thank you very much.
We are coming to the next question. It is Kai Klose from Berenberg.
Yes, good morning. I've got a quick question on page 6 of the presentation. We had a 6.6 million other operating income in Q4. Maybe you could elaborate a bit more on that, what's behind that. Second question would be on the regional split of the capex and maintenance spend. You mentioned you invested quite a lot also in Gera and Chemnitz, maybe also. So what was the rough split by regions? And the third question would be looking to the vacancy rates on a regional basis, would you also consider maybe to exit an entire region? Let's say, for example, talking about Salzgitter with vacancy rates down below 5%, would it be a potential option to exit that region and realize capital gains there? Thanks.
Thank you for the question, Kai. First of all, your question regarding the development of other operating income in the fourth quarter, the 6.6 million, to the very largest part, that means 6.2 million, that's the effect of the release of the provision for real estate transfer risks that I mentioned at the beginning. So from the 6.6 million, 6.2 million is the effect of a positive one-off that we exclude from FFO, where we had to make this provision last year, and we were now able to release that to the very largest part. So that's the development in other operating income. Regarding your question, Salzgitter region, no, we have no plans to exit this region, especially because we see in Salzgitter now a very positive development, not only regarding the vacancy rate development, which is now below 5%. Also, the like-for-like rental growth looks very nice. We had, without CapEx programs, without effects from vacancy reduction, 2% in Salzgitter 2018, 2.7% in 2017. So we simply see the effect from a reduced vacancy rate on the like-for-like rental growth, which is simply has the effect that we can increase the rents stronger than in the past. And therefore, from our point of view, the Salzgitter development is not at an end. Perhaps the vacancy rate reduction is now slowing down. That's very clear. Below 5% is, I think, an excellent result, but the like-for-like rental growth is picking up. And looking at the investments, this was also a question from you, perhaps interesting that we have reduced our CapEx and also the maintenance in Salzgitter quite substantially compared to prior years. On slide 26, you see all the details. If you add up the investment in Salzgitter maintenance, that's approximately €8. CapEx, that's approximately €11. So this adds up to approximately €18 per square meter. That's compared to the overall portfolio below average, whereas in prior years, Salzgitter was always the region where we invested more than in other regions, often in levels to €25 per square meter, something around that. So two effects, perhaps interesting to observe, an increasing like-for-like rental growth without effects from vacancy reduction, and we were able to reduce our investments. So it's not a continuing effect that we have to invest. We are also able to reduce vacancy, let's say, back to a normal level and to get an attractive rental growth. And what was Salzgitter in the past is regarding investments today, a region like Chemnitz or region like Gera, simply because there we have higher vacancy rates and we still see upside potential in this regard, therefore the higher CapEx levels.
thank you very much. And maybe two quick follow-ups regarding 19, the regional split of the capital and maintenance spendings will be similar to 2018, or you have targeted a certain or a specific area where you want to spend a bit more? And second question would be on the financing. You mentioned that last year's acquisitions have not been refinanced yet with debt. Is it that you want to increase the number of unencumbered assets, or is it just that you were waiting for, I don't know, a good environment, financing environment to take mortgages on the assets?
Starting with the financing question, today we have still a very comfortable cash position. Yes, we are already in the process of refinancing some portfolios, but without any time pressure. Perhaps we have some ideas of fixing interest rates already today. But we will do this step by step and also try to harmonize this with new acquisitions. So perhaps it doesn't make sense to put too much money on the balance sheet today while acquisitions are coming more and more over the course of the year. There's no general shift in our strategy towards a higher share of unencumbered assets, which means unsecured debt. Still, we feel very comfortable with the 80% bank loans as the main source of financing and the 20% unsecured debt. The 20% unsecured debt could develop perhaps a little bit more towards 25%, simply to give us more flexibility for potential future disposals, for example. But you should not expect a general change in the financing strategy, which, by the way, we think is a very successful financing strategy. If you look at the development of margins on the corporate bond market or in the unsecured market compared with margins in the bank loan sector, where we see absolutely no change or even slightly reduced margins, we think that the decision that we made in 2017, 2018 to keep our main source of financing within bank loans was right. And then your question about the split of CapEx in 2019, you should expect a similar picture as in 2018. So still larger investments in Chemnitz and Gera, and perhaps a little bit more than 2018 in the Berlin region, especially in Brandenburg and Havel, we will start larger modernization programs. So perhaps the Berlin region will have a higher share of CapEx than in 2018.
Many thanks indeed.
And the next question comes from Thomas Rothäusler from Jefferies.
Hi, good morning. I do have a question on property valuation. Currently, your gross yield is 6.5% and 940 euros per square meter. And if I look at the movement in 2018, it was largely driven by yield compression. I mean, it would be helpful if we can get some color from your side on transaction evidence for this kind of property valuation, and also maybe you can refer to some deals you might have seen in the market and especially on pricing.
Yeah, of course, Thomas, we can do this. That's, by the way, the bad news on the acquisition side, that the competition is not only this year or 2018, also in the years before 2017, 2016, higher than the prior years, because simply we see really also other type of investors in our market. If you look at locations where, for example, open-ended funds in Germany are buying, you see from larger open-ended funds acquisitions, definitely not only in the top 7 locations, also locations like Zwickau, like Chemnitz, so typical TAG locations. But what makes it then harder for us on the acquisition side, where we are frequently outbid and where we keep discipline and we are still, on the other hand, able to acquire, this is, of course, good news for us for the valuation side, because we simply have, as I said, more transaction evidence and we simply have more and more data points where we can refer to. And for us, there's no need to grow externally very aggressively. Why should we do this? I mean, the platform has a very critical size or a good critical size. We have still potential from our internal vacancy reduction. Of course, we're working hard on that, but we have not to overpay for new acquisitions. And if we look at the prices that we see there, the 6.5% gross yield on average, that's really an average in our portfolio, still looks definitely not like the end of the road, to say it like this.
Mm-hmm. Can you refer to some larger deals in the area, or is...
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't want to any names, even though it mostly is public. But perhaps just as I mentioned, as one example, if you Google what some open-ended funds in Germany was engaged in residential sectoral buying, you will see that this is, of course, also a large extent East Germany that they're buying.
Hmm. Okay. Maybe one question on CapEx. I mean, it increased, if you look at per square meter in the course of 2018. What was the impact from cost inflation? How do you consider it in the guidance for 2019?
Yeah, the cost inflation impact was around 3%, and in the guidance for 2019, we have the same increase assumed. And the 3%, or between 3 and 4%, something around that. This number is still okay if you compare it nationwide, and we still have perhaps a little advantage that the cost inflation in Chemnitz or in Gera is perhaps lower than cost inflation if we talk about a portfolio in Berlin or Hamburg. Mm-hmm. Also, availability of craftsmen is there, also difficult, but perhaps better than in the top 7 locations where really no craftsmen or just a small number of craftsmen is available, and where price inflation is strongly above the 3 or 4% that we currently see in the market, in our market. Mm.
Okay, thank you.
And the next questioner is Martin Manuel from Oddo BHF. Over to you.
Hello, Mr. Thiel. Just two questions left for me. One is on your disposal channel, the disposal set that you did. It was with a vacancy of around 28%, I think. Who are the buyers of these kind of properties? Is there a special class of buyers in the market who take over these kind of properties?
If you look at the larger transactions that we disposed in 2018, that's on page 22, the 461 units and the 719 units, these are, let's say, institutional buyers who are perhaps engaged more in the regions where we sold. You see, this is also, of course, federal states where we are, but parts of, for example, North Rhine-Westphalia or Lower Saxony, where we have not the critical number of units to start programs that are appropriate for these kinds of portfolios, or where we simply have a different opinion perhaps on future development chances there. I mean, we are looking at our portfolio very detailed on a micro basis. So look at the individual city, look also at the quarter of the city and make a judgment there. So these two transactions were institutional buyers, whereas in the ongoing disposals, we have a lot of private local investors who often take the chance and say, okay, that's from their point of view an attractive price to buy a smaller apartment block with high vacancy rates, and they are able to handle that perhaps differently than we are. So therefore, they're not necessarily making a mistake. But for us, the disposals in 2018 were really a good way to clean up the portfolio in comparison to the portfolio that we had last year.
Okay, I see. Second question, kind of more general question. What do you think about the current discussion about the property tax? Because Social Party tries to change the rules that landlords will not be able to pass over the property tax to the tenants. Any opinion on that from your side?
Difficult to say. I mean, it would be very surprising, and I can't assume that, or we can't assume that this is now really becoming a law, because if you have in mind that we have a lot of private landlords who would also be affected, I mean, this would be really hard, especially for them to bear this cost. But that's a proposal on the table, as we see so many proposals today. Generally speaking, about the discussion we currently have, I mean, more regulations to come, to what extent ever, is perhaps something that is that one should expect. Looking at a discussion which is very extensive about increasing rents, about new regulations in general, I mean, from this just a personal opinion, we think that we will see further regulations, and then the question is for us, okay, do we have to change our business model in terms of or in expectations that we have in the future? Our clear answer is no, because if you follow the discussions, what is criticized are larger modernization programs, strong increases in rent in the larger cities. That's perhaps not the business model, or definitely not the business model TG has. Other things like property taxes or like real estate transfer taxes, yes, of course, it hits us, but I think we are very well prepared for that.
Okay, thank you very much.
Next up is Georg Kanders from Bankhaus Lampe.
Good morning from Düsseldorf. I have one question regarding the NAV calculation. You have here hidden reserves from real estate investment properties. What are these properties? Or is this only your headquarter, or what is this?
Yeah. Thank you for the question. I mean, these are mainly two properties. One property, you're exactly right, is our headquarter here in Hamburg that we use on our own, and we're accounting for that not with a fair value approach that's not allowed on IFRS, but on a historical cost basis. And the second property where we also cannot account for it with a fair value is the project development that we have in Munich that you perhaps remember from prior years, where we're now really constructing, where the plan is to convert a former office building into apartments, and where we can perhaps give you an update during the course of 2019 about future developments there. And of course, as you know, that the Munich market is developing very strongly. We see here more and more reserves in the valuation, which is not reflected in the balance sheet, but for purposes of the NAV calculation, we include that this fair value increase also in this regard.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then regarding acquisitions, is there anything more concrete you have already, some exclusivities you have already reached?
Please understand, Georg, that we can't give you any details there, but talking generally, we feel that a similar size like last year should be possible too, but it's really difficult to make here really an exact guidance and exact estimate, because it's really a business where from one day to another you know that you get the portfolio that you're working on perhaps for a longer time, or you're overbid by a third party. So it's difficult to say concretely what you should expect in the next weeks.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And the next question comes from Bernd Janssen from Victoria Partners.
Yeah, good morning. Two questions. One referring to the portfolio details, page 26, and the other one to the disposals on page 22. I'm a bit surprised to if I look at the reletting rent versus the current rent, that, for example, Gera shows almost like 10% upside. Could you help us to understand where it's called like apples for apples, so where there are no additional CapEx measures during tenant turnover required, and you basically benefit from market rents being above comparable rents, or where I guess you said, for example, in Salzgitter, the almost like 5% higher reletting rents might indicate already a stronger market these days, and I'll ask the second question afterwards.
Yeah. Thank you. That's a very good question. Looking at the Salzgitter development of reletting rent compared to current net rent, it's really nearly completely driven by the market, and you can see this if you look at the maintenance and capex level, which are, let's say, like this on average or even below average, whereas in a region like Gera, that's absolutely true. You see a stronger increase in the reletting rent, but that's in this case not really directly a like-for-like basis, because that's then more coming from vacancy reduction, where we then have more apartments modernized, also modernized perhaps apartments that are in a special sector, perhaps modernized especially for elderly people with some helps and some features they need for their daily life. So therefore, a stronger increase in rent is natural. So in all regions, we have a positive like-for-like rental growth without effects from vacancy reduction, without modernization programs. So there's a positive rent development, which is perhaps if we do nothing, so that means without any modernization, without CapEx programs, something at between 5 and 7%. And then including effects from CapEx programs, of course, we are able to increase this number, which was especially the case in regions like Gera.
Okay, so I guess with the last sentence, you almost like answered the question that I wanted to ask. So in that regard, Gera is a bit of an exception, that almost all other numbers indicate also very solid, call it underlying rent potential, while Gera involves a bit more CapEx measures.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay. Second question, referring to page 22, called like a technical question, with regards to portfolio disposals. Has the red blocker structure still played a role in the disposals? So meaning did you have a buyers buying in share deals and making use of still, I guess, at the end of 2018 red blocker structure, or was it all sold in asset deals?
Yeah, it's completely sold via asset deals.
Okay.
So we had no transactions on the acquisition side from our side, and also on the disposal side, where the let's say formally red blocker structure was taken. I mean, today it's uncertain if this still works or not. We're all waiting for the new law to really be effective or to have the concrete disposal on the table, but to make it sure, no, these were all asset deals.
Because the reason for my question is that actually also means if you sold around fair value, this would again be apples for apples. If you would have sold in a share deal with red broker structure and the buyer not buying, not having to deal with transaction costs, then you could have made kind of a book value there just by the difference in the valuation approach. But this
that's correct.
This was really like for like, as it were, as it is.
Yeah.
Okay, understood.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And next up is Sander Bunk from Barclays.
Hi, do you hear me now?
Yeah, Sander, we can hear you.
Yes, sir. I still have to my third question, sorry for that. And the second question was, answer was well understood. The third question I had was on the net debt to EBITDA guidance that you provide, which is quite interesting and quite useful. Based on your previous commentary that you intend kind of to keep net debt flat going forward and applying that 10.6 times guidance, I get to an adjusted EBITDA number of in the region of the 220 million. If I look at your guidance on slide 24, then it actually looks that you basically expect pretty much flat EBITDA going forward because the net rental income is offset by higher personnel expenses. So what am I missing here?
Yeah, I think that's the effect of comparing a number for the full year EBITDA with a number, not an average. The net debt is then always, let's say, on a balance sheet date. Perhaps this is the reason for that. So generally, the development in net debt to EBITDA is definitely in the region where we try to show you that.
Sorry, I don't quite understand, because then the EBITDA is for the whole year, right? It's for the whole year of 19.
Yeah.
So that includes everything, and then the net debt you intend to stay that flat. So why is it? I don't quite understand the difference.
Or what my comment towards stable debt was more to a debt on a per square meter basis, and this could, as we also, for example, sold properties this year, mean that we have really a lower net debt in total, but the net debt per square meter is perhaps flat. And then applying EBITDA on that perhaps leads then technically to the effect that we have good or stronger development in net financial debt divided by EBITDA.
Okay, so just to assume, because I think the other comment you made is that you are not looking to gear up based on your when your LTV progresses. So kind of therefore, I took the assumption that your net debt overall, not even on the per square meters, would stay broadly flat. But therefore, the assumption of 10.6 times a divided by a 2.3 billion of net debt divided by 10.6 arrives me at a 220 million adjusted EBITDA guidance. You think that is too high? Or is your guidance just very conservative?
Would not be unusual for that.
Yeah, but it's a material difference. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, no, very clear. I mean, we had an increase of 6 million this year from 2017 to 2018. Of course, we expect a further increase in EBITDA, but perhaps hope you understand that we don't want to give an exact EBITDA guidance today. Of course, you can model that.
But you are effectively giving that.
Of course, on the second way, you're right. Coming back to the slide, what we wanted to show generally as a comment is that we look on our financing structure not only via LTV, as many market participants, perhaps many companies are doing that because, and we had the discussion at the beginning of the call, LTV, I mean, is heavily influenced by property valuation today, driving that into a direction where we deliver with the help of valuation gains. We look more at maturities, we look more at development like ICR, net financial debt, and also like the net financial debt per square meter. And, of course, headroom to covenants is something where we also think that's important. That's what drives our thinking if we talk about a stable financing structure or not.
Okay, that's understood. Thank you very much.
And we're coming to the next questioner. It is Andres Toome from Green Street Advisors.
Hi, good morning from my side. Just one follow-up question regarding Chemnitz and Gera. Just wanted to know, how do you see the long-term potential for vacancy reduction in these regions? Do you envisage reaching below 5% level there or even lower?
Yeah, thank you for the question. I think the potential is definitely larger in the Chemnitz region, which is, by the way, a market where we see on the acquisition side a lot of competition, so a lot of investors are entering this market right now. We think for a good reason, and we are happy that we acquired larger portfolios in Chemnitz in 3 or 4 years back. So perhaps the Chemnitz region could show a similar development, perhaps not in these dimensions, but similar like Salzgitter. In Gera, it's more a development of step by step. We were happy to reduce that last year by, as I said, approximately 40 basis points. That's perhaps also a good estimate for the years to come. So also a positive development, but not in sizes like we should expect in Chemnitz, where we had a reduction by 100 basis points last year.
Okay, thank you very much.
At the moment, there are no further questions. So if you have any additional questions, please press 9 and star on your telephone keypad. 9 and star for any additional questions. Mr. Thiel, there are no further questions.
Okay, thank you very much all for taking part in our conference call. As always, if you have further questions, please feel free to contact me directly or Dominique from our department. Thank you very much again for listening and have a nice day. Talk soon. Bye-bye.